The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Every day, there's another question for the pastor. All you got to do is pay attention to the news. Pay attention to the community around you. Every day, there's another question for the pastor. That's why we have the Ask the Pastor program. I just have all kinds of questions. But the program is designed to give you an opportunity to ask the pastor, put questions to our guests about things that are on your mind. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you would like to do that. Let's say good morning and welcome to Pastor Don Moore. He is pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
How's the weather in Florida these days?
It is really, really hot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How hot is really, really hot? You know, if you ask somebody, if somebody in Arizona says it's really, really hot, that's different than if somebody in St. Louis says it's really, really hot.
Yeah, so, it's a dry heat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so we get a wet heat here.
A wet heat.
Yeah.
So what's the temperature going to be today?
About 95, but the humidity is really high. We're probably going to get a whole bunch of thunderstorms over that.
Yeah, we just get rain just about every day here lately. I don't know what's going on. Might be the end of the world. I'm not sure.
Hopefully we can put that off a bit.
So, Apopka is close to Orlando, right?
Yeah.
So are you, are tar balls on your mind? Are you worried about oil washing up on your coastline there?
I don't have to worry about it. It's here a little bit. We're actually kind of in the middle of the panhandle, or not the panhandle, but the peninsula that Florida is, and I'm not really close to the beach. It's not a specific problem for me, but it is affecting the beaches on both coasts to some extent.
Is there anger in your state about this man-made catastrophe?
Yes, there is a good bit of that, but I have a tough time calling this man-made. It's a little more complicated than that, I think.
Well, there was no hole in the Gulf floor, and then man put a hole in it, and now we have oil spewing all over the Gulf. That's man-made, isn't it?
Well, I guess you'd have to say a man put a hole in the ground, but I don't think it was, I'm pretty sure it was an act of God that caused that thing to break open.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
You're going to blame God for this?
Well, if you want to call it blame, I guess you can do that.
I think you're the first person to espouse such an opinion.
Well, I don't think I'm
the rest of us. The rest of us are spending all kinds of time trying to figure out who's blank to kick and who to blame.
Yeah, I understand that. I think that's kind of dumb, though.
Why is that?
Because what's the point of blaming anybody? It doesn't change anything. I would say that's probably true about any event that's passed. The event has happened. It is what it is, and a lot of people are working on fixing it. I think everybody ought to be turned to that. That would be the most effective thing to be doing.
Well, if I came down to Apopka, Florida, and burned down your church, would you want me to be accountable for that?
Yes, but there's a lot of different reasons for that. One of the reasons, I guess, is for society's sake, it's kind of important to punish a criminal, but I don't know that a crime has been committed out there. There are going to be some liabilities that somebody's going to have to deal with. That's just simple common courtesy as a citizen. If you make a mistake, or if you could have done something, if you're responsible in some way, then you do try to make amends. So I don't have a problem with that particularly, but that's not necessarily about blame.
So I want to make sure I understand this clearly. The fact that there is a disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, what's God's responsibility for that?
Well, I'm only going by some of what I've heard the engineers say that were out on the well, the ones that didn't die. They said there was a backwash of pressure that was unprecedented that blew the top off of that well, and was any way they could have prepared for it, even if they did everything in the world they understood to do, which is pretty close to what they did anyway, they could not have stopped it. That's what they said. But what the cause of that back pressure was, they couldn't say.
All right, let's take up a topic here from Islamabad in Pakistan. You're a former military guy, Coast Guard, right?
Yep.
So you understand military things better than some of us who never served. At least I'm making a peripheral connection from you to this story, but perhaps you've heard about the Bin Laden hunter.
Yeah.
A construction worker, an American who has been detained in Pakistan, he embarked on a solo mission to kill Osama bin Laden, and he says he was obeying an order from God to avenge the 9/11 attacks.
Mm-hmm.
According to Pakistani security officials, Gary Faulkner claimed God revealed the order in a dream, prompting him to travel to Pakistan in search of al-Qaeda's leader. Relatives and acquaintances say Faulkner is a devout Christian and skilled hunter who has been to Pakistan at least 6 times. They say he learned some of the local language and even grew a long beard in order to blend in. In Washington Wednesday, State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley said U.S. officials in Pakistan had not yet spoken with Faulkner because he was detained in a remote area near the Afghan border. Wow, this is bit of a challenge to sort this out. It's my understanding that the United States is doing everything it can to try to kill Osama bin Laden. Isn't that your understanding?
Well, that seems to be the idea on the surface anyway. I mean, it's not like we don't have reason to be worried about him in a war like we have. So I suspect that's probably true.
If word came today that the United States military had found and killed Osama bin Laden, would that be a cause for celebration, Pastor?
Well, it's kind of a double issue. I think any time a life is taken, that is a disaster. On the other hand, God established governments to protect us from people like him. And there is clearly a mandate for the government to take action against people like him, to punish and to establish order. And so in that sense, it's probably a celebration of a victory of a sort. But on the other hand, it is a terrible loss, too. And I think that's probably true of every issue in war. It's complicated.
Boy, it is complicated.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that I'm just trying to think this through here. If it had happened, doesn't look like it will, but if it had happened that Gary Faulkner had managed to penetrate Pakistan, and there are, at least there have been reports in the past that intelligence officials seem to think that bin Laden is hiding out in Pakistan.
Yeah.
If Gary Faulkner had somehow found Osama bin Laden and killed him, would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, that's, again, a lot of questions involved there. He says that God told him to go in a dream. I can't say outright that that's not so, because God does stuff like that on occasion. But I am a little skeptical, just because I don't have any other witness to that effect. But if it's so that God told him to do it, then he has the authorization to do it. And I guess that would be a good thing, if God said do it. If he didn't have that authorization from God, then it's murder. So then, you know, it's a double disaster. Plus, you know, I suppose you'd have to wonder about his mental state, too. But, you know, there's a lot of ifs in there.
A lot of ifs in there, and that's why I ask you, I'm thinking to myself, this is not a far-fetched scenario that I'm about to construct here, but if Gary Faulkner had somehow found and killed Osama bin Laden and subsequently been arrested by Pakistani officials, then it seems to me the United States would be in a bit of a bind.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could charge him with murder, and I guess what? The United States, which is seeking to kill Osama bin Laden, is officially has a policy that we're at war and killing him is an objective. The United States would then say, oh, no, Gary, that was wrong. You shouldn't do that. Do you see the potential for some inconsistency there?
Well, sure. The hand of God that he states openly in Scripture belongs to government. That's the one that Romans 13 talks about. And they're the ones that have that authority in the world.
Unless you're like the Apostle Paul and you get a Damascus Road experience,
yep.
Which Gary Faulkner didn't get a Damascus Road experience, but he got a dream, and the Bible specifically says that Christians are going to have dreams from God.
Yeah. See, on the other hand, and the reason I'm mainly skeptical about this is that it didn't happen. You know, God tells somebody to go do something, and he's unable to do it for whatever reason, then you got to wonder, is God a liar? Because if God wants somebody to do something, he's along for the ride if you're obeying. And, you know, who can stop that? I'm pretty skeptical about the whole thing because it looks like a deception.
All right, so if we can, at least with the evidence before us, come to the conclusion that his claim that God told him in a dream to kill Osama bin Laden was not true since it did not reach fruition, is it possible for somebody to be at the same time as this AP story describes, a devout Christian and on a mission to kill somebody else?
I would say in this case, the only thing that would make that possible in my mind is an unstable mind. And then it could be. It is also possible for Christians to sin, sometimes big ones. So something can go off that way. So this guy, he's either telling the truth, in which case God is a liar, or he's telling a lie, which would make you wonder about his motivations, or he is a little bit off his mental state, in which case we should pity him. And, you know, none of those are real good situations. In any case, it is not the Christian's job to go and kill an enemy unless it is authorized by God. So either he must be telling the truth for that to be true, and it doesn't sound like that, at least to me, or government has to send you. And, you know, then it would be under the authority of God.
I guess this cannot and probably has not ever happened to a pastor. But if Gary Faulkner had been a member of your church and had come to you and said, Pastor, I had a dream. It was as real as it could be. I'm fully convicted in my heart and mind that God spoke to me in this dream, and I believe that I have this mission.
Yeah.
What would you do?
I would have to counsel some skepticism, but because dreams, you know, are part of our mind, and I don't know how I'd have to hear it and face it to be have any assurity of the thing, because it just doesn't seem like something that happens in the Christian world. It happens in the Old Testament, but I don't see it in the New Testament at all. It just doesn't seem to me like something Jesus would deal with in that kind of a way. He has his arm, and it is established, and it has a purpose.
And I'm inclined to agree with you on that, and we could just sort of settle there if it weren't for the Damascus Road. I try to imagine Paul going from place to place saying, well, I was on my way to Damascus to persecute Christians, and then Jesus appeared to me.
Yeah.
Oh, in a blinding flash of light, and I was blind for several days because of it, and then the Holy, you know,
Well, there are visions there, but there also is backup on that, because Ananias knew about it. Plus, he wasn't told to go kill anybody. His mission was quite different. That's the nature of the thing, is you look at the effect, the fruit of it, the reasoning for it. Honestly, there's no way I could have been sure about such a thing, because I'm just not that smart. But my instinct says be skeptical. I would never counsel a guy to go and do such a thing. I just wouldn't. I would have a hard time approving. If he was sure, then I would have a tough time with that.
505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join our conversation here at our Ask the Pastor Hour with Pastor Don Moore. Hi, Harold. You're on the Bible study?
Yes. I could speak up a bit louder. You know, I'm all hard hearing and that. But I do have this comment to make, that isn't there somebody, I don't know if it's a government entity or whoever it was, that has offered a bounty for the death of bin Laden. That's been done before, and some people have collected on getting rid of some real troublemakers, but they've had to disappear, so no one has hunt them down. But that's when I understand that somebody has offered a bounty. So this Gary, what is his name, is he got the Lord on his side, and then he's going to collect the bounty if he comes through with it.
All right, let's talk about that. Thanks for the call, Pastor.
I am not certain, but I believe the bounty is about information and not the death. Not positive about that, but I think so. Even if that was true, that the bounty was offered, that would be an authorization by the government. But that's not his claim.
So if the government says wanted dead or alive, kind of like the old West, put up a poster of a guy and offer a reward, If the government wants to do that and they offer, say, $1 million, for information leading to the death or the capture or death of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
That's okay? Is that biblically okay, since it's a government extending the offer?
I don't morally is not what I'm talking about. And the government is a secular issue. It's the hand of God in the world to keep order and to do justice and to protect the peace. And they have their tools. And I'd have to do some thinking about whether that was moral or not. But on the other hand, as I said, God has laid his justice in the hands of such people, or at least his earthly justice. And if that is a legal thing to do, then I would say they have the right. Whether it's moral and ethical or not, I don't. I have to think about that one some more. But I'd say they're authorized anyway.
All right, let's take up another thorny issue here. Boy, you really. You got the difficult day, I have to say.
You do this to me every time, Chuck.
I know. It's just like whenever you're going to be on, I get all these really weird things that you have to try to sort out.
Yeah.
This is a story from Memphis, Tennessee. The story says that a women's softball coach in Tennessee says her team was banned from a church league after learning she was gay. Jana Jacobson told a Memphis newspaper, The Commercial Appeal, that officials at Bellevue Baptist Church told her she had a deviant lifestyle and her team would not be allowed to compete. Jacobson said her team is made up of both straight and gay players. They were looking for more games to play when they discovered the Cordova Church had a league. Jacobson said she registered, paid the entry fee, and attended an organizational meeting. Later, a church official called her seeking another meeting. At that one, officials began questioning whether she was gay. When she said she was, they told her the team could not play. Bellevue spokesman Jim Barnwell said the church had no comment on the incident. Is this a biblical move on the part of the Bellevue Baptist Church, in your opinion, Pastor?
I think so. I mean, clearly the homosexuality is unacceptable to God, and we have a public place to stand on such things, and that's not a terrible one to stand on. If it's their league and it's their rules, and if they don't if they don't dissociate with the public sin like that, then you know there's a finger to point there. It is a scandal against the church, and I can understand why they would do such a thing.
Why do I feel like you're probably in the minority on that viewpoint?
Well, maybe I am. I don't like the changes anything. It's kind of like what you were dealing with in that Bible study a little while ago. God has his agenda, and we teach what he teaches, or we teach our own stuff, which is dumb. And in this case, you know, you have to hold to what he's doing. And if we all hold to it, then we're on the right page, and if we deviate from it, then we don't. It's just in this case, they're doing what God has taught them to do, and how can they be faulted for that?
Well, somebody might say, Pastor Moore, that what God has called you to do is to not only love your neighbor but love your enemies.
Yeah.
And perhaps the way to influence these people who have an unbiblical view is to socialize with them, interact with them, put them in your softball league where they can be exposed to Christians who have the correct view and thus perhaps be impacted. So what they've done here is exactly the opposite of that. How would you respond?
I would say that it depends on the point of the ministry. If it's supposed to be Christian fellowship and sportsmanship and that sort of thing, then there's no place for an abomination thing going on there. If the point is to minister to people that are outside the church, it might have a different outcome. And I would say either one of those are possible, but it sounds like they took the approach that this is for Christian fellowship. And they decided not to do it that way. I think it would be a great thing if you found your ministry in the midst of a homosexual enclave of some kind. I don't know if there is such a thing, but if you found yourself wanting to do ministry like that, that would be a great way to go about it. But it would have a specific point and an open point. It wouldn't be a mystery. You'd be looking for somebody to find out that they're on the wrong page and to help them with it. I don't know if that's the right way to go or not, but I think I would agree with them if their point was Christian fellowship.
Ms. Jacobson told the Memphis newspaper that the officials at Bellevue Baptist Church told her she had a deviant lifestyle.
Yeah.
Is that the way to handle... I'm not here to criticize the Bellevue Baptist Church.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here more to ask the question of, if you're going to make a move like that, is that the way to do it?
I don't think I would do it that way. I wouldn't use that kind of language, probably. You know, it may be something that's valid enough to state, but wouldn't be my first choice in a way of ministering to someone, and it is a ministry opportunity. If you have someone in your sphere of influence and you have an opportunity to bring the good news to make a change, that would be the way to handle it. I mean, if the public statement is that this is a deviant behavior and we can't permit it to be a part of our Christian fellowship, right, that's one thing.
Hold your thought there. I got to take my break.
All right.
Pastor Don Moore with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Dale Meyer. This October 2nd through 5th, Diane and I will welcome Luther Hostel to the campus of Concordia Seminary. Luther Hostel is designed for adults 55 and over to experience 3 days of fun, fellowship, and learning. Dr. Paul Meyer will be this year's feature presenter, October 2nd through 5th, with an optional trip to Perry County, October 6th. Call 314-505-7486 or visit csl.edu.
Due to a pre-recorded broadcast of Law and Gospel on Friday, we are moving our open mic segment to Thursday. It's an opportunity to ask any question of a theological nature, including what we spoke of during the week, such as the last session on governmental atonement. Please write down the toll-free number at 1-800-730-2727.
Weekdays at 6 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The abortion industry often makes sacrilegious comments. When Planned Parenthood of Houston opened the largest abortion mill in the Western Hemisphere, one of their officials said a prayer calling the mill sacred and holy ground. It's 78,000 square feet with a third floor dedicated to late-term abortion. Imagine the number of intentional killings that'll take place there. It's nothing close to sacred or holy ground. The abortion mill in Rockford, Illinois, put up a picture of Jesus next to the entrance. He's depicted with his middle finger up, and it reads, "Even Jesus hates you." Other signs attack priests who pray there weekly. The priest's presence and prayers have cut their abortion business in half. We're dealing in spiritual warfare. Keep us in your prayers.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Out there, I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. An American construction worker detained in Pakistan while on a solo mission to kill Osama bin Laden says he was obeying an order from God to avenge the 9/11 attacks. According to Pakistani security officials, Gary Faulkner claimed God revealed the order in a dream, prompting him to travel to Pakistan in search of al-Qaeda's leader. In Washington Wednesday, State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley said U.S. officials in Pakistan had not yet spoken with Faulkner.
It's not a cooperation issue. It's actually simply a logistical issue. Given the distance from where he was detained, it's taking some time for us to reach him and be able to have consular access to him.
Relatives and acquaintances say Faulkner is a devout Christian and skilled hunter who's been to Pakistan at least 6 times. They say he learned some of the local language and even grew a long beard to blend in. I'm Steve Coleman.
Hi, this is Chuck Rathard, inviting you to join us for a live Bible study broadcast on the road on Wednesday, June 23rd, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Columbia, Illinois. I'm hoping to meet many of our listeners from both South St. Louis County and Southern Illinois. Again, that's the 10 o'clock Bible study live from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Columbia with Pastor Stephen Tice on Wednesday, June 23rd. And we'll enjoy lunch together after the program. We'll see you in Columbia.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Jeske from Time of Grace. Did you know that in addition to hearing Time of Grace every Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on KFUO, you can also see Time of Grace every Sunday morning. Watch us on ABC 30 every Sunday morning at 7:30 for some straight talk and real hope. Time of Grace.
Saturday mornings at 11:30 on KFUO Radio.
You're listening to our Ask the Pastor Hour, the Bible study, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment. We're talking about this, what is described as a softball brouhaha down in Memphis, Tennessee, where a Baptist church, the Bellevue Baptist Church, apparently has organized a softball league. It was determined that one of the people who had entered a team in that league as a gay lifestyle, and so she and her team were booted out of the league. We were trying to figure out whether or not that is an appropriate move on the part of the Baptist Church. And if I understood you correctly, Pastor, you were, based on the details that you have, in agreement with that move. Is that correct?
Yeah, with some reservation, I guess, because it's just, you don't have enough information. I don't understand what the point of the group was, or why they took that position exactly. You know, I probably would have tried to be gentle about it and maybe private about it, but it's hard to say what they actually did.
And when the charge comes that there they go again, those Christians, I tell you, those people are the most hateful people. They're just so judgmental, discriminating here as they are. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's a hard thing to respond to because, it's the authority of Scripture and of God. It doesn't hold any weight with people that say stuff like that. Most of them probably are aware that it is our duty-bound position, according to the Word of God, to be exclusive of that kind of behavior in our midst. It's the sort of thing that you bring to bear on our church matters, but not in the secular world. If the same person was having a conversation with someone from that church in a different environment, they probably would have a very different conversation, because there is no hatred here. It is just how the church is supposed to behave in its dealings with the world. And I wish I had some more details. It's just hard.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I have what's been provided here by the Associated Press. Let me just ask you one more question about this topic. And if I were to make the argument on behalf of Jana Jacobson, the apparently gay manager, coach, player on this team, that if the church wants to open up its league outside of church teams...
Yeah.
If one of the requirements of playing in this league was what church do you represent and what does your church teach, that would be one thing. But
right.
It appears that this team was looking for more games to play. They applied to play in this church league. They were admitted. They went to the required meetings, and they were admitted.
Yeah.
If there is nothing prior to that moment of a sexuality policy or something, then they messed up. And they should allow the Ms. Jacobson and her team to finish the season and rewrite their policy next year and go. If I were to make that argument, what would you say?
I'd say that's a valid argument. I mean, if they made a mistake and got themselves embarrassed, then maybe they should deal with it openly. You know, this is not something that we wanted to do. By rights, it seems that we made a mistake and that we'll accept this with the understanding that the rules will be changed next year. I would be perfectly fine with a statement like that, because it makes clear where they stand. And I don't know what to say. You're making a valid argument there.
All right, now here's another story in the news. This actually comes from Australia. And the headline is, "Our Own Extinction is Forecast." We humans are about to be wiped out in a few decades. The grandchildren of many of us will not live to old age. Hear it from Frank Fenner, Emeritus Professor of Microbiology at the Australian National University and the man who helped eradicate smallpox. He told The Australian this week, "Homo sapiens will become extinct perhaps within 100 years. It's an irreversible situation," he says, "and you can blame global warming." Now, the credentials seem to be there. Professor of microbiology, seems to be a scientist. He seems to be at a large national university in the nation of Australia. And he says, our time is up. When, what do you say?
what that has to do with microbiology. The global warming thing is a proven hoax. 30 years ago, we all heard the same people saying that it's going to freeze to death. So, you know, how can they hold any water on this? I don't know where the guy could be coming from that has any validity at all.
Well, I can tell that you're resolute in your perspective there, but there are lots of people, some of them listening to us now, when they hear from what is perceived to be a scientist, an intelligent man holding an important position, make a prediction like this, which at the very least gives us pause,
yeah.
If not serves to alarm us to some extent.
Well, I'd say read the paper. Whatever the guy said, read it. If he's saying it's going to get too hot for us to live here, then I'd say he's all wet, because there's no proof of such a thing. The supposed proof that was put forward has been proven to be invalid. They it was a deception, or at least the data was a deception, to try and prove a point that doesn't seem to hold any water. So. The water hasn't risen, the temperature hasn't gone up or gone down in an ordinary, regular fashion for a good long while. It's just, doesn't make any sense. So if the guy says that, then he must believe that we're getting warm. I'd have to see the data.
Well, you know, and that's where the story gets kind of strange here, as it continues from the Herald Sun down there in Australia. The writer says, but here's the odd thing. Just three paragraphs into this report announcing the end of the world, the reporter and Fenner were off talking about rabbits, Fenner's writing habits, his bookshelves, his student days, his war service, and the weight of the book he wrote on smallpox. And did he ever tell you how he used to study skulls with Norman Tyndale? Now I'm beginning to think, well, this guy's just, he's just nuts. I don't know whether I should lean on his scientific reputation or if I should think that he's something of a joke. Either way, he has made this prediction, and I'm a little nervous about just dismissing it out of hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand completely. There's a lot of people that are worried about this, and it's because the some very impressive people have put forward that hypothesis. And so the smart thing to do, the rational thing to do, is to look at their evidence. And so far, the evidence isn't holding water. So I don't know about this guy. It sounds like he did some pretty important stuff, that he might even be a pretty smart guy. But on the other hand, pretty smart guys have made some pretty major errors from time to time. So, and sometimes they're not entirely normal in their minds. They get eccentric and a lot of other things go on. But I can't speak for this guy because I don't know him. I haven't seen his data. I'd say it's worth a look if he's making an important assertion like that. But I'm kind of skeptical.
You know what I worry about, Pastor? I worry that because so many of us are ignorant of the effects of global warming and even disrespectful to its reality, as you seem to be, I worry that we're going to end this planet kind of the way it's been described here by Frank Fenner before Jesus gets a chance to come back.
Oh, boy. That's really crazy. he's going to come. He said he's going to handle it. I got to assume we're going to make it to then. I don't know how he's going to go about it, but I'm pretty sure the Earth will be here when he does it.
Do you think that he could go about it by cracking open wells in the Gulf of Mexico and setting off volcanoes in Iceland and, the drill. Yeah. You know all the things that are happening all over the world.
Right. That's not what he said.
No?
No. He said it was going to be a pretty dramatic all-at-once kind of a deal. So I don't think that's the way it's going to go. Book of Revelation, says it multiple times that it's going to be all at once, kind of sudden. And certainly he can do that. I have no reason to disbelieve it. On the other hand, I have a lot of reason to disbelieve this. I would say, trying to be a rational person, that as soon as the evidence convinces me, I'll be all on board with it. But I'm not going to talk about end-of-the-world scenarios that Jesus has nothing to do with, because I know that's not the case.
All right, one more subject here. I'm curious as to how you feel about this. I hope you have an opinion.
I always do.
I count on that. President Obama has made what are being described as positive steps to fill a religious freedom post. Michelle Vu, a reporter for the Christian Post, says that President Obama has made a positive first step to fill the empty ambassador at large for International Religious Freedom Post, according to a Christian ministry serving persecuted believers. Obama nominated Dr. Suzanne Johnson Cook, founder and president of the Wisdom Worldwide Center and senior pastor of Bronx Christian Fellowship Baptist Church in New York City, on Tuesday of this week for that position. The post has been empty since the start of the Obama administration, despite pressure from religious freedom and human rights groups to fill it. Hopefully, the nomination of Dr. Johnson Cook is a positive first step that the Obama administration is serious about advancing freedom of religion for every person and denouncing violations of those rights. That's a quote from Carl Moeller, who is president and CEO of an organization called Open Doors USA. He added, to date, the administration has made several positive affirmations of global religious freedom, yet there has been little action demonstrating a commitment to those words. Are you encouraged, discouraged, or unaffected by President Obama's action to fill this office?
Well, it's, you know, that's just kind of hard to say. I mean, even that guy says hopefully, but it's positive evidence of some movement. But on the other hand, if it was about caving into interest group pressure, then maybe it's got nothing to do with that. You know, it's one of those things you have to see how it follows through. I don't see how it could hurt particularly, depending on who this ambassador is and what authority she's going to have. We'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
You know what I wonder? I wonder if let's just say a Lutheran pastor. We got any Lutheran pastors up in Canada?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
If a Lutheran pastor were to preach the law from Leviticus 18 or Leviticus 20 or Romans chapter 1 on the sin of homosexuality and subsequently be charged with a hate crime in the nation of Canada, I wonder if the religious freedom ambassador would be on the job there. What do you think?
I would say it'd be reasonable to be there on that. I kind of doubt it, though.
Why?
Because it would not be in agreement with this administration's opinion. And since she's going to be working for him, I would suspect that he wouldn't back that up.
Well, now that could be a problem, it seems to me. Because one man's religious freedom is another man's religious tyranny.
That's true.
And that makes me nervous about this position and how it carries out. Do you think that this represents an inappropriate intrusion by the kingdom of the left, the civil kingdom, into the kingdom of the right, the ecclesiastical kingdom?
No, I wouldn't say that. If the thing was carried out in the way that it should be carried out, it would be to encourage everyone's religious freedom, which is a statement of our secular government in our Constitution. And that would be a good thing to do. It doesn't say to make everybody Christian, because that's not in our Constitution. It doesn't say to make everybody Muslim or to allow Muslims to suppress or Christians to suppress. It would discourage that sort of thing. And that is supposed to, by its nature, make it possible for all religions to pursue their own goals, which would allow Christians to pursue the goals that God has given us. That would be a good thing. then each religion would be able to stand on its own feet and be approved in its own word. I don't see how the idea could be bad. How it's carried out certainly could be, because people are not pure-minded about this stuff.
Well, as is usual the case, we are either advanced or victimized by the way it's carried out, not by the idea of the thing.
Right.
And so that's what makes me a little nervous about this. Whoever is occupying this office is going to have some kind of, I guess we could call it, religious worldview.
Right.
And that may mean that religious freedom looks different to him or her, in this case her, than it does to you and me. If that happens, what do we do? Anything?
Well, as it turns out, being citizens of this great nation, we have some authority in matters of convincing politicians what to do by our votes and by our voice, and it would be reasonable to use those things to make our view prominent. On the other hand, I suspect, just from the nature of this thing, that it has very little authority to accomplish anything except a voice and the prestige of the government of the United States to take a position. In real authority, I suspect it has none. So it would be one voice among many having an opinion. How important is that? Probably not very important.
I have a related story here that says, the headline is, two-thirds of global population live in religiously restrictive countries. Two out of three people in the world live in countries with high levels of restrictions on religion, according to a new Pew Research Center report. 64 nations out of 198 countries and territories, about one-third of the countries in the world analyzed, have high or very high restrictions on religion. Though a minority of countries are restrictive, these countries have large populations. That translates to nearly 70% of the world's 6.8 billion people living in countries with high restrictions on religion, which mostly affect religious minorities. So we have in our Bill of Rights here in the United States a protection for the free exercise of religion. Does that mean we should be fooling around in the other two-thirds of the world, Pastor, where there is not necessarily free exercise of religion or maybe even oppression against certain religious minorities?
Yes, I think we probably should.
Really?
The most of those countries, I think you'll find, where that oppression is present are not Christian-based. Some of them are probably government oppression because they don't like one kind of religion or another. And some of them are probably a cultural oppression because the people that live there are very violent about it. But in any case, God loves all those people and wants them to come to the knowledge of the truth. And he has laid the authority and the directive for us to attend to that. So if that's so, then we really have no good reason to abstain from it, although you have to pay attention to consequences. If you're going to go and do such a thing, and people do, and you get stuck in it as far as authority goes, you should expect to be punished for it, because that authority is just as valid as any other. God doesn't want people to be punished for religious matters like that. In that particular way, Christians speaking, or for that matter, anybody else, I mean, he wants us to be won over by the words. You still have to deal with the authority of the people that are there and expect to be punished for it. And that happens, too,
When you say that you think that the people of the United States have a responsibility to encourage, maybe even assist oppressed people who are oppressed because of their religion elsewhere in the world, is that opinion mostly flowing from your faith, or mostly flowing from your patriotism?
Well, what I said was not a patriotic discussion. Now, what I said was a religious thing, because it comes from the authority of God in Christ and the things that he's done and the things that he said to us. I would not say the United States, per se, should be doing that. But if a Christian person in authority in the United States saw a methodology for that, then I would say fine. But I'm talking about Christian people in general, wherever they happen to be, and certainly not exclusive of the United States of America. We're here, and we should be engaged in this thing. It's a religious thing for me.
Well, it turns out that, here's another related story, it turns out that Christian nations reportedly dominate the world's best religious freedom spots.
Right.
The story says countries with Christian backgrounds have the best religious freedom record, according to initial findings of an extensive report on the status of religion freedom in the world that was reported. A glimpse of the findings of religious freedom in the world 2007 showed that countries with a Christian background were ranked highest for level of religious freedom observed in that country. The four countries given the highest religious freedom rating are Hungary, Ireland, Estonia, and the United States.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I think it's completely expected. You know, there have been problems with tyrannies oppressing people. Christian nations in this day and age have tended to come through the tyranny of monarchies and emperors and that sort of stuff, and come to a rational understanding of the way things ought to be in freedom, each person free according to the rights God has given them. That's the way our documents talk. And so we have democratic forms of government, typically, which guarantee that kind of freedom, because we want to be free to do that stuff. And if you give authority to governments to make that different, then they're going to use it at some point. And so those things have been typically guaranteed in Christian-based nations. That makes perfect sense to me. It may not be a totally rational leap, but that seems like the way that has happened in this country anyway.
So then, in the minute or so that remains here, are you saying that you believe that President Obama's new ambassador at large for international religious freedom, Dr. Suzanne Johnson Cook, who has been nominated, to my knowledge, has not been confirmed yet, should have these things on her mind? She is a pastor at the Bronx Christian Fellowship Baptist Church in New York City, so she has a religious identity as well as a government identity.
Yeah.
She should care about these things on behalf of the people of the United States?
Yes. Well, that would be the job. And she should be concerned about it as a Christian for other people in the world, too. As a Christian person, she should be concerned about it. This would be an opportunity for a properly thinking person, spiritually speaking.
Well, we're out of time. I wish we could discuss this further, because it seems to be a built-in violation of separation of church and state. But that we'll have to have that discussion on another day.
I'm sure it'll come up again.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Stay
thank you.
Stay cool down there in hot Florida.
Oh, I'll work on it.
All right. Pastor Don Moore, St. Paul Lutheran Church, Apopka, Florida, here our guest on our Bible study program. Tomorrow we continue in 2 Corinthians as we have begun a study of that book. Pastor David Boyce Clare will take us through the first 11 verses of 2 Corinthians 2. And Pastor Stephen Krenz is due to be our Ask the Pastor guest.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.